This episode is brought to you by Bellatoris Publishing, bringing stories to the world that last forever.
Today on Faithfully Fantasy.
Something curious about this island they found, actually the sun is black. Drake is talking about there's maybe some volcanoes around. But the interesting part as well is this magic in this island. So I don't know what is this reference about, because it changed when they go into the water. See, maybe like we said before, it's something
more
in the water.
Magic.
Yeah, then maybe it's reacting with the dragons. Satan is looking up, and then the female sees Satan in this abomination. Maybe saw Satan's eye, and because we think that maybe somehow he is half dedicated or the. Hello and welcome to Faithfully Fantasy,
the husband and wife podcast talking all things Onyx Storm.
I'm JC.
And I'm Sean.
And today we cover chapters 39 to 42. And just heads up, we use strong language, express passionate opinions, and explore complex themes.
This episode, as always, will contain spoilers from all three books, as well as snippets of information we've had from Rebecca Yarros since the release of the third book.
And before we start with the squad brief, quick reminder, you can now subscribe for exclusive content. Think early access to episodes, bonus episodes every month, and totally ad-free listening. You can even try it for free and cancel anytime. For the best deal, check out faithfullyfantasy.com, or if it's easier, just subscribe right on Spotify or Apple Podcasts for instant access.
Also, if you're enjoying the show, please take a second to rate us wherever you're listening. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, all of it. It helps more fantasy lovers find us. It's one of the easiest ways you can support what we do. A quick tap and you've made our day.
And now, without further ado, let's get into the squad brief.
It's a sad one, so buckle up. Zinal is a cruel god. Traeger is gone. We leave Zelna with one less flyer, one less griffon, but the promise of a 40,000-strong army. We fly to an unnamed black sandy island with magic reminding us we're halfway home. Traeger and Sela can rest forever. We have a small and emotional ceremony before carrying on with the mission. We stay with Violet and Riddick and look after the fire when six massive dragons appear from nowhere. We didn't find the Irids, they found us. We learn all about Feather Tales, the Criterion, and the test we failed.
Well, this episode is something I was actually waiting to do, because I remember the first time when I read these chapters, when we found out about the Irids. The first time I wasn't happy about it, but now I was just so anxious to trying to see like any theories or anything that we can get from these lines.
Yeah, I read this totally differently the second time and the third time. I mean, I read it a few times now. Shall we get into it?
Okay, chapter 39.
Epigraph. Sometimes the best gift the God of Luck can give is his absence. Zelna, Isle of Zinal by Major Asher Soaringale. So this is just kind of, with good luck comes bad luck, and just a sign that he can just as easily give you bad luck as he can give you good luck.
Yes, it's trying to say that sometimes even when you are trying to look for good luck, sometimes you get the bad one.
Yeah,
so you
yeah.
need to be prepared for anything that you can get.
Yes. I wonder what happened to Asher Soaringale when he went to Zelna. What did he get? Was he put to the test? I would imagine so. It seems like all visitors did. What if it's something we've already seen before?
Yeah, that would be like really interesting to see.
Fables of the Barons? The book?
I'm not sure if it's every single one that wants to stay on the island, or it's just the ones that want to have a meeting with the queen, because they want to visit the queen.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you just want to be like in the city as a tourist, you have to do exactly the same.
Or... Yeah, yeah, it seems a lot, doesn't it, for someone that just wants
Yeah, that's killing the tourists, you know?
Yeah, but the islands don't seem to care about that.
Yes, but yeah, would be interesting to find out what was happening in all the journeys on Daddy Soaringale.
Yeah, we need like a travel show.
Yeah.
Asher Sorengil.
Like an extra episode or extra book just from Asher Sorengil's
Daddy
journey.
Sorengil on tour.
Yeah.
No, it needs to be like a one of those like travel TV shows. Like today I'm on the Isle of Zelda.
Like a blogger.
Yeah. I received a book.
Yeah.
About Penin and demon dragons.
So as you remember in the previous chapter, Trigger is dead, is on the floor. Violet is having a really bad moment here because on one hand, she wants to kill every single one of them because this is more the natural reaction. Somebody's hurting somebody or your gang, and she's the responsible for all the lives of these people. So I think for her, it hurts even more. But Satan is the one who started using that wing leader voice saying, violence, not overreact, because otherwise he will dead on vain. So she only thing that she can say is just after swallow all the pain is thank you.
Oh, it's awful, isn't it? The bit that stands out to me, Garrick kind of puts his hand on Riddick's shoulder and comforts Riddick. I feel like those two are getting closer. It's a result though, isn't it, of your best friends being in a relationship. And I think as a result of that, Garrick and Riddick spend a lot of time with each other off the page. So they get a bit of time on the page as well in Hedotis. They're on the balcony, they're just hanging out. But they must be together quite a lot off the page because Zayden and Violet are. And it made me think of, you know, like Harry is always so busy that Hermione and Ron are always together. They're always together off the page and you never really see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it made me think of that. But I'm not suggesting that Garrick and Riddick are going to be in a relationship. I'm just suggesting that they're getting closer as like...
Yeah, because both of them are playing the same role, but in the other one. So with Violet and Satan together, they are like really close. So they know like all the things that is going on between them.
So the Griffins slowly turn and face Sela. And this is just heartbreaking because I'd forgotten. I was so wrapped up in the fact that Traeger had an arrow in his heart. I'd forgotten that immediately Sela was going to die. Mm-hmm. And the Griffins slowly turned to look at her. What would the dragons have done if it had been one of the riders that had been shot in the heart? I don't think they would have just turned. I think they would have attacked.
That's a really good question because obviously dragons, they have more like value by themselves, so they think they are better, so they can't treat them in the same way. But I doubt it. The dragon will die for the right, like maybe if I Riddick, the one who dies, I don't think Atron will die because of that. The only one I would think that it will die because they're a rider is Stern.
Yeah,
I'm not even sure if
Satan
dies, if Asagael will die with him.
Well, Tan seems to think she would just be inconvenienced for a little while. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and other thing that has changed since Iron Flame, when Sela was basically dying, it was dragging itself to go to Traeger, and Darna was basically screaming inside because the pain, how painful is all that is seen. When in Iron Flame, she was constantly like, I wonder how it tastes like a griffon, or I would like to eat that kind of stuff.
Been now some character growth for Andana as well.
Yeah, so now they're allies, as Taryn has been saying all the time.
Yeah, don't eat our allies.
Yes.
That would be really weird if she did. Anyway, I really wish we'd had the scene with the Queen. I feel robbed. I really do.
I know, it was so many expectations about this island. And after Trigger died, it was just, okay, just let's go. We have what we wanted, there's the support of the army, and that's it, just
let's go. Did you notice that it was Mira, Auric, and Violet that went? Mm-hmm. It should have been Kat, Violet, and Auric, because Auric can speak for Navarre, Kat can speak for Poramiel, and it's Violet's mission. But obviously Kat was having none of it. She didn't want an audience with the Queen. Either she was possibly both like angry.
Heartbroken.
Heartbroken. Just not giving the Queen the time.
Yes. Definitely, because she has to witness how they kill Trigger, saying nothing or just holding. And probably by the time when she needs to release all that pain, she needs to be alone or just with the people that she trusts.
Like, she doesn't need to be able to speak on behalf of Poromiel because they're just after the army. They either get it or they don't. We do find out that Oryk agreed to terms that were favorable for Navarre. It seems to me that either Zanal truly was with them, because that is a massive deal. They end up with 40,000 troops. Like, the first lot will go immediately, and then the next round, like the rest of the 40,000, which we don't know how many it is, but the rest of them, a lot, will go when they're ready to take them. But that seems massive. What are Zelna getting out of it? They're not getting anything, are they? Unless we just don't know. And maybe that's why it happened off the page, because there's still something that they got in return, which we don't know about.
Yeah,
I don't think it's the eggs. I have got a suspicion from this episode where the eggs are. But I wondered whether Zanal was actually with them and that's why the deal went in their favour, or whether the Queen knew that it had gone badly and Traeger had lost his life and that they, like, they'd suffered at the hands of their people. So they felt like they owed them something.
No, I don't think they feel guilty about it, because in the end it's Zanal's will. So if they feel guilty about it, they're basically saying they are not agree with their own God.
Yeah.
So has to be something that we haven't seen in the page, obviously. There's an agreement that the people from Zanal, they will win with this agreement as well. Like you said, I don't think it's going to be the axe, but that's probably one of the only islands where the dragons actually can live, because there's some magic there. Probably,
yeah, but they wouldn't. They don't deal in dragons, do they?
No, and there are no mentions at all. They are interested on dragons, neither.
Violet says something like, "We could lose this war to the Dark Wielders," and then Tern says, "At least we're already in with the enemy." And he's given some sass here, like good old Tern. But this makes me think that is going to happen next book. So I'm pretty sure Violet has her dream walking, mind walking for a reason. She is not going to be with Zayden in the next book. She's going to have to talk to him somehow. She's going to have to find some things out somehow. Do you think she's going to be able to communicate via his mind, via his dreams?
Yes, I think that's how it's going to work at the beginning. From time to time, until she learns how to control it, she will be in Zaydan's dreams.
Yeah, I think he'll be deliberately not talking to her, though, because he'll be brooding. But eventually, this is what I'm holding on hope for, that it's going to be a spy. But I just can't get over the Baylor thing. We've got another Shadow Wielder.
Yes. But we need to remember that in those 12 hours they are missing, Zayden get married with Violet. So obviously he's still in control of his will. It's not that he's feeling any, I don't know, like mentally had changed.
That's the feelings or
anything.
His soul is with Violet.
Yeah, so at this point he's, it's an asin, I guess, when now it's permanent, red eyes and veins.
Yeah, but he doesn't have red eyes, does he? He has amber-flecked onyx eyes. He doesn't have red rings around his eyes.
It's because at that point he's an initiate, and I'm guessing somebody else, it will have nothing like those flakes, so you won't notice. Violet noticed, because normally she'd be cold then, but has changed. But Sagel is the one who said that, "I don't know how they're going to take it when they see you with those veins and the temples." And normally they're like the second stage of the veining, first eyes, and then there are veins and the temples.
He's going to get them, isn't he, in the next book?
I think in the next book he's going to be completely red eyes and veins, like full.
But he's not giving up his soul. So we're holding on to that.
Yeah. That's the thing that I'm still wondering, in what moment he's supposed to lose his mind, or what moment he's supposed to like completely turn and start to working with the venom. Because at the moment, everything that he's doing, he's controlling
he's
everything.
Not going to.
Yeah. So we know that he's living probably with Berwin. So I don't know if in those 12 hours that he's doing stuff is taking advantage that Berwin is unconscious or he does something so he can be free to do whatever.
Maybe he's like, I've got to go sort my shit out, then I'll come back.
Yeah. Or maybe just Berwin don't care because he knows that he will come back. It's just how it works.
Berwin does say, I've got my ways of making you conform.
Yes.
But they're going to cremate Traeger and Sela on one of the unnamed isles, which will take them off track for Loisam. That's what happens next.
Obviously, Violet is feeling really bad about it. And she said that she doesn't want to be in charge of that. This Sedan could do a better job, or Drake, or Mira, anyone else except her. But Sedan is the one who says to her, the leaders, they do the best job, is the one they don't want the charge in the first place. And I completely agree with that.
You do?
Yes.
I don't at all.
Some people, they are power hunger. They, once they had the power, a lot of times they change or they just get addicted to that power. But there are some people, they had the power, and because they feel so much respect for the people or they understand their responsibility, they don't want it, but they want to do the best they can to be on the standards of that role.
Maybe. Okay, you might have convinced me. I just think that you have to... Yeah, it depends on the reason. So you have to want to be a leader, otherwise you wouldn't be a very good one. But you have to want to be a leader for the right reasons, not just for the power, just because you want to be the leader.
I think there's a massive difference between being the boss and being a leader.
Yeah.
There's completely different you can be parts.
You can be a leader without having anybody.
Yeah, sometimes in a team, there's a boss and there's somebody that has more knowledge and more... I don't know, is the one who runs the whole thing.
It's the difference between being a manager and being a leader.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's interesting that he's basically saying here the best leaders are not Kat, are not Oryk, and are not himself. Although, maybe he doesn't want the job.
Yeah.
But he has the job. Yeah. Maybe he's saying he's a good leader as well because he doesn't want the job. He also, at this point in this conversation, says to Violet, you promised to help me protect Tirindor. And she says, I meant it. I'll stand by your side. Will she have to protect Tirindor without him in the next book? Is she the Duchess? Or is she the Dowager Duchess? Is she going to be treated as the Dowager Duchess?
Taida's absence, she is the one in command. She is the one responsible for everything because it's still... kind of like a royalty thing. So you had the king, you had the queen. So she's
is
the
that
Duchess.
True? It's not true in the UK.
If Charles dies, it's Camilla completely different.
But how do we know? We don't know that.
Well, there's no. Well, they had a scenario and that kind of stuff, but. I think it was more as I used to be in the old times. You had the king, the queen, and then you had all this hierarchy of families or titles.
Yeah, but it doesn't go to the wife. It doesn't go to the wife or the husband. Like, had Queen Elizabeth II died, it wouldn't have gone to Philip. It would have gone to Charles, like it did go to Charles.
Yeah, but Sedan and Violet had no children at this point. So if
but it would go to Bodhi. This is the thing. I don't think she's Duchess unless the rules are different and it does go to the wife. But that would mean that it would pass out of that family line. That is not normal.
Yeah, Sedan from the beginning, he was saying that his only interest was protect Violet.
Yeah.
If for that he needs to put Tirindor on the front, he will. He won't have any questions about it, any doubts about it. So maybe. Violet, she won't be ruling Tirindor, but because she is a duchess, she had a title, then she will have all the protection.
Yeah, well. I think he did say that. He said, I will use Tirindor to protect you, not you to protect Tirindor. But that is different to what he says in this scene where he says, you promised to help me protect Tirindor.
Yes.
That's different.
Which could be obviously foreshadowing as well, that he knows that eventually he won't be there and she needs to protect Tirindor.
Yeah, but I don't think he cares. I think he cares less about Tirindor than he does about Violet.
Well, obviously he knows that Violet's a strong woman and she can do a lot of stuff. So she's the one that he genuinely trusts that she will do what is necessary to protect the place that he loves. So all this conversation is happening when they're trying to get some sleep. So Violet is basically falling asleep in Seydan's arm. He gives her a sweet kiss on the forehead and he's saying to her that she needs to be better than him because he is like expecting more from her. And he, at the same time, because he knows that she is constantly looking for a cure for him, but he is assuming at this point, there's no cure for me. That's why I need that you have to be better than me.
Mm.
So that is maybe, I don't know if I was foreshadowing for the end of this book, that in the end, doesn't matter what Violet is willing to do because that cure is not going to be there and say that it will go beyond. Or if it's maybe for the next book, once Seydan goes even deeper in this venom side, there's no cure.
There's a cure.
That's something that we need to talk in the next chapter once the Aerys comes.
Yeah, that's definitely.
That's going to be interesting too.
Memoirs of Luz Bell. She loved him. She lost him. And he came back. But wasn't completely him. She feared him. She fought him. But she fell for him. Memoirs of Luz Bell. Now available on Amazon.
Chapter 40.
Epigraph.
Conscription rates are hereby doubled for each province until further notice. Public notice 634.23, transcribed by Percival Fitzgibbons. Fitzgibbons, where's he been? It's been a while. He hasn't been doing the death roll for a while.
Yeah.
Just a sign of the times, or are they worried that the army of Tirindor are going AWOL because of King Tauri's boo-boo with the second Erasure Accord, and now that all of the all the parts of the army are under the control of the dukes?
Yes, so I wasn't sure how to take this one the first time, because you have, for one side, the Dark Wielders, they are rising, they managed to go to Basgaiath when they're not supposed to go that close. So a lot of people have died since then. And the other hand, you had that Tirindor is getting really strong as well.
And so, Tirindor is no longer under Melgrin's control.
Yes. So I didn't know if it's because Dark Wielder, they want to overly protect because the war is not over, or it's because they see there's going to be maybe a second revolution coming from Tirindor as well.
Yeah, I think it's that. And it's interesting. It'll be interesting whether conscription is doubled in Tirindor or whether it's only doubled in the rest of the provinces.
Yes. Something that we both agree is that we think as the King Tauri, it won't last by the end of these books as a king.
No, Zayden's going to kill him.
Or the Tauris, they won't be there as a royalty.
I think Zayden's going to kill him.
Yeah, history's going to repeat it.
Yeah, yeah. The Dark Wielder in the shadows.
Killing a beloved king.
Although he's not beloved. Beloved by himself. And beloved by Holden.
So they are looking for this new place to cremate Trigger and Scylla. So they're flying for a long time. There's a moment that Violet is even concerned that maybe they're flying so much and that if they had to return, the Griffons won't be had the strength to come back,
mm-hmm.
but then in the distance they see land, they see some islands there, and she thanks Amari for that, because after what happened, she said that I don't think I will ever pray for Zanal.
Yeah.
So I found it interesting because she says this, that I don't want to talk to Zanal anymore. So it's like, I'm not looking for Zanal anymore. And isn't that island when they found the Irids?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was wondering if maybe Zanal works exactly the same way as Hirion, that when you're not looking for them, when you're trying to maybe ignore, and you are the one who wants to maybe do your own luck, let's go to say that, is when you get even luckier, you have more the favors from Zanal.
No, so I don't think Zanal is like that. I think it's just a sign that all the gods are with Violet. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if she prays to them or not, the gods are supporting her, because she's going to overthrow or put an end to the war, which I am convinced the war is what sent the gods away.
Mm-hmm.
I think the gods were living, breathing people, but they, possibly the first six, anyway, I feel like they were the ones that were ousted by the first war. So they're supporting Violet. Violet is essentially their champion. So yeah. Zanal is with her regardless of whether she prays to him. Hadean, same thing.
Yeah. Something curious about this island they found, Violet is saying that from the sky, because they're flying at nighttime, the sun looks black. But then next day, when they are still on the island, actually, the sun is black. Drake is talking about there's maybe some volcanoes around. So you can think about these areas are with a lot of volcanic activity, and that maybe they can explain why the sun is black. But the interesting part as well is there's magic in this island, and there's even more magic than in Zanal. They say there's maybe, they feel half of the magic there is in Navarre.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, is it maybe possible that the volcanoes or this kind of like volcanic activity is somehow fueling the magic in the place?
It could be like a direct conduit, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're saying the magic coming from the ground and nothing coming more from the ground, the lava, for example. Yeah.
Maybe the magic's in the lava.
Yeah.
I think that the fact that this island has magic is interesting. It feels like we're closer to Loisam.
Mm-hmm.
And you would previously, the further we got from the continent, the weaker the magic. But that's not the case. We're now getting stronger again. So either there's another continent over there, Loisam's massive, or it's to do with the volcanoes. I thought it was interesting that the sand was black as well, especially as first she was like, it could just be the moonlight, but it would never look black, would it? It would look possibly silver. I think it's obvious that it's to do with the volcano, but I also wanted to think of some like other like less obvious ones. And I thought it was quite poignant that Traeger and Cela would rest here, because black is the color of mourning, and it could be that the island is mourning something, maybe a big loss, like the loss of the other half of the magic, or I don't know, maybe Malak has some kind of link to that island, which would be fitting because that's where Traeger and Cela are, and they talk about giving him to Malak. But also, yeah, it feels like they actually picked quite a good island to lay them to rest on.
Yeah. So after they had the ceremony, Aetron is the one who brings the fire, so Traeger and Cela, they get burned. After that, they start to go back to, okay, we need to start to keep with the plan. The plan is find the Irids. We need to see where we are right now. So Drake is trying to find out which island they are in the map. So he's struggling. He has in one hand the map, and the other one he has the cat. And he is trying to do everything, but he can't. So Mira is watching this, and she's like, oh, come on, give me that. And Violet thinks that she refers to the map. And no, she tells
she
the
kitten. She wants broccoli.
Yeah, and then Drake is, it's not called like that, it's called broccoli. Like, broccoli? Why you put it there? Nah? Well, because nobody like it, but it's good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were like, why then call it carrot? Because it's a ginger carrot. And I can't remember exactly what he said, but it's just like, no. It's
just to annoy you. Yeah. It's just flirting. Shameless flirting from Mr. Cordella.
Yes, but you start to see now there's some chemistry here between Drake and Mira.
I love Drake and Mira. They're like my second favorite couple.
Yes.
Drake is saying that they're at the southern tip of a group of volcanic islands. Yeah, he says it doesn't match anything that's on the map. And then it says, though, there's another mass of land just over there, like an hour's flight west. And he talks about, like, the sizable cliffs on that island. I just have a sneaky suspicion, like, an hour's flight is not that long, is it? And the Irids said, we've had a long flight. I don't think that's where the Irids live. So the Irids have said that they've had a really long journey.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is because the Irids have been following the squad. They've not been home for a while. I think they live around here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But their island won't be on the map.
Yes. I mean, something that we got clear about where the Irids live is it has to be a place when there's no humans.
And it's an island. An island. It's not the Barrens. And
far away as well. Yeah. Mm. So, I was completely convinced that they were living in the Barrens because the Barrens sounds like a place that nobody wants to go there because it's all drained and everything. But
I think that's where they could have been.
Yeah, so we see that every single breed had like a piece of land in the continent, and the Barrens is the only one there when there was none of the six breed. So maybe in the beginning is when they used to be before General Darrowmore decided to drain everything.
Well, yeah, but there's also the point that dragons all start off as feathertails, of golden feathertails.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there weren't always different colored dens. Maybe the different colored dens came later. Maybe they were all Irids.
Mm-hmm.
But then they got corrupted by taking the magic from the ground. And then they just, that was it. They got their color.
Yeah. I generally think that all the breeds from the dragons, they're starting from the Irids.
Yeah.
Because the Irids, since there, they can change all the colors.
They can choose the color.
Yes, so maybe they start, I don't know what happened.
They started channeling from the ground.
They stopped that.
And then they could no longer change. And they chose their tails. And this is the thing, like, the language that the Irids use around the dragons, they don't like the dragons.
No. The Irids, they think they're superior than the Tern or Sagael or the other dragons.
I think they are too. I think the dragons are corrupt.
Violet comes with a plan. They need to look for all the islands that are around just to make sure they're looking everywhere as possible. So they start to split them partners. Say then go with Garrick. And Garrick has like a little funny moment here calling Satan Honey Bear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I don't know if it's because obviously they had a really good relationship, but I was expecting something more like that from Redoc.
Yeah, so maybe they've been spending a lot of time together.
We're talking about it, so yeah. I want to like point it out that maybe this is like a Redoc influence here.
Uh-oh. Imogen won't be happy. And also that, like, I just love the Garrick and Zayden relationship whenever there's a Zayden POV and Garrick is around. See, I just love them.
Oh,
too.
Yes. That is seeing him threshing. It's just the best.
Are you okay there? Zayden's like pins his feet to the floor because he doesn't want to move. The conversation that comes in this part between Zayden and Violet is so interesting. He says, "You're not a trigger. You're the only thing I can't fathom losing. Wielding to protect you has always been an instinct, but now it's uncontrollable." Right. So obviously this is because he loves Violet and blah, blah, blah. Or is it? Or is it because he, like, none of the Venen want Violet dead. Berwyn wants Violet alive. Theophany wants Violet alive. Otherwise they would have killed her by now. Like, Jack's the exception, but he still hasn't killed her because he knows Bowen wants her. Is the, like, need to keep Violet alive and uncontrollable actually because he has to keep her alive because the Venom needed her alive?
That's actually a good question. There's maybe some little hints of the Venom taking over his mind.
I know, because... and I'm normally the like, no, he's not gone, he's still our Zayden. But this one, I don't know, this one felt like it's always been a thing, but now it's uncontrollable.
Yeah, to be honest, the only Venom that actually I'm trying to kill Violet is the one that Colonel Atos had been sending.
Yeah.
But we think there maybe there are no like proper Venom, there are something else. We don't know if they're given like a potion or something that turns into a Venom or something like this, and they're like under the control of the Atos. So I don't know, but it's completely different to the other Venom, like the higher ranks Venom.
Yeah, and I know that this isn't normally like me. I'm normally the one that's like, he's still there, he's our Zayden. No.
The hints are there.
Yeah. He also says, I mean it when I say you own my soul. You're the only place I feel completely like me anymore. Mm-hmm. My hill, latest hill that I'll die on, is that magic can't take his soul if Violet has it. Mm-hmm. It's taking something else. It's taking his, like, humanity at some times. But I don't think it's taking his soul.
We know magic like balance, and when you are willing to get anything for power, when you're seeking for power, then maybe magic will think, okay, in that case, the more valuable thing that you have is your soul. But when Zayden case, he wants to protect the people that he loves, he just needs enough power. We're saying this a lot of times, trying to defend Zayden.
Yeah.
Maybe magic trying to get a balance for that. Okay, you have good intentions to use the power that you have here with us. So maybe need something else.
Yeah, it's taking something else. It's taking something. I just can't figure out what it is.
Yes.
Because Jack says, doesn't he?
Even you decide what is taken.
Mm. Then Violet, obviously after the honey bear comment, it's because Violet has chosen to stay with Riddick. So she's saying Sigil needs to be with Crod. Is it Crod?
Yes, Garrix.
Yeah, I get Crod and Kor mixed up. They're Bodies and Garrix, but I think it's Crod, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So Sigil needs to go with him because Tern and Sigil have the best chance of communicating over distance, just in case they find something. It's a good call, but Zayden isn't happy about it, and neither is Tern. And she says, we'll see them later. And Tern says, I'll say the same when you've been unable to communicate with your mate for weeks and are deprived by choice, he grumbles, stalking into the woods. Swaying trees mark his passing. Humans don't mate, she shouts after him.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely don't normally. But I am convinced that Violet and Zayden are like somehow fated mates. They're like soulmates. That's why she has his soul. And we get so many hints about this through the last books. Like, she's scenting him. Mm-hmm. She's like, she can't be apart from him. There's loads of stuff that make it seem like maybe normally humans don't mate because that magic's that magic has been like dormant for such a long time. But there's no reason why it can't be a thing in a fantasy book. I mean, it's most often a thing in a fantasy book.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking right now. There's other books when humans, they are mate as well.
I mean, there's hardly ever, well, they're normally fae, aren't they?
Yes, but...
One fae and one human.
Something like that. But it happens. Yeah. And Rekha Jarrett like to include absolutely everything. The more variation she can get in the book, the better.
Yeah, so. But it's been hinted at since Fourth Wing, hasn't it?
Yeah.
The, like, most beautiful man I've ever seen. That always happens. Mm. Like, as soon as you meet a character in a fantasy book and they're described as the most beautiful person you've ever seen, they're like, oh, they're mates then, aren't they? It's kind of a bit obvious.
Yeah.
So, yeah, why wouldn't it be something in here?
So, Violet, she will stay on the island because somebody needs to be next to the fire because of the cost and the somebody has to stay there until the fire is completely off. And Darna, she is really tired as well because she's been flying, so she's sleeping. So and Violet said, yeah, I will stay here. I'll give her more time to Darna fall asleep. Then Riddock and Atron, they're just having like the time of their life, just Atron getting Riddock completely wet because they've been having pranks to each other.
Yeah.
So we see like that kind of relationship between Riddock and Atron.
Yeah, and Violet's like, you two are really weird. And they're like, are we or are you the weird one?
Yes, but obviously we need to remember that both they had the same age. So they have maybe the same mentality. But Tan and Violet, they're not going to be in the same vibes because Tan is more kind of like a curmudgeon.
Yeah.
Yes, but they're playing around and Violet, she wants to have a little break next to Andarna. And then when she is just resting, she feels that something's hitting the floor and she thinks there's one of the dragons, that maybe it's Atron or Tan or somebody, but she's looking around and there's nothing there. She sees dragon footprints in the sand, and then it's when, boom, from nowhere, see this dragon appearing.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing they said to the dragon is, hello, human.
Well, there's a big slide whistle, isn't there? And I like the idea that the slide whistle is because normally the riders communicate with the dragons through ground magic and a magic channel. But this kind of represents a change in frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And actually now they're communicating through sky magic. And yeah, there's got to be the slide whistle. You don't get that. I guess you only... Do we have any instances where there's a mind-to-mind communication from a dragon to a human that's not bonded? We don't, do we? This is the only time.
I think Tarn talks to Zaydan.
Yeah, and Sigil talks to Violet, but
yes,
there's a bond.
Mm-hmm.
So they can. It's not like just a random dragon. So like if Aetrim wanted to talk to Violet, could he? Don't think he could.
No.
So the slide whistle is like another sign that Irids, so Irids have a lot more control over bonds and connections than the other dragons do.
Yes, because the first thing that Violet say is, you speak my language, and the answer is, we are magic.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's interesting one as well, that we don't, he don't say we have magic or we can use magic. We are magic.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is the end of this chapter as well.
Yes.
Jumping to chapter 41.
Epigraph. What we know about dragonkind is nothing compared to what we don't. Colonel Kaori's field guide to dragonkind. He's not just talking about the seventh breed here. I mean, he obviously isn't, because when he wrote this, he didn't know about it. Yeah. But
philosophical here. That I only know that I don't know anything.
Yeah, we don't know anything. He didn't know about the seventh breed, though, so this is ironic, isn't it? That like it's even bigger than that.
I mean, he barely knew the sixth breed that he has in the continent, so obviously seventh breed was just something that,
It's such a, like, an interesting job that Kaori's got, because he can never know more. And he must, you know, the dragon that he's bonded with, he must be, like, constantly asking the dragon questions, and they're like, no, not today, Kaori. I'm not going to tell you.
Leave me alone, Dragon Watcher.
Yeah. He's like regretting his choice of human. We get some new dragon names here. We've talked about this in the last couple of weeks. They're not Gaelic names, but it doesn't mean we won't try and work out what their names mean. So there's Dacin, or Dacin is like the Greek root of hairy, shaggy, and thick. I'm not sure that that's anything, but we don't like her anyway. She's mean.
All of them, to be honest.
Yeah, they are all a bit haughty, aren't they?
Yeah. It was really bad. I mean, we were going to talk about it right now. That's the idea, but waiting for them for half book and then after finding the way they treat Andarna is just so annoying.
Yeah, but dragons be dragons. Dragons are dragoning.
Yeah.
That's what dragons are like.
Dragons will be dragons. That's yeah. A t-shirt.
Dragons will be dragons. Could I have a t-shirt?
There are no really good dragons, to be honest. They're a little bit rude. They start to treat Violet like maybe she's not intelligent enough because she's not replying after mm-hmm. they say hello. And then it's Sandarna, the one who has to intervene, like, well, she's scared because you are like really close. And then, yeah, given that, at least they go like one step backwards. They kind of like polite, but at the same time, a little bit like aggressive.
Yeah, they like, said sorry, didn't they? Yeah. And Riddick's like, oh, these ones apologize.
Yes. But then we have Andarna that she's really excited about it. Like, oh my God, we found them. We're looking for all of you guys. And then she starts to talk about everything. So she talks about threshing, presentation day.
I know, but there's so much more information here that we don't get.
Yeah.
Even like the bits where she hatched and she heard things. Like Violet is not reliable here. No. She misses stuff out.
Yes. And so many things, and even when they find out when Terns arrives as well, because Violet was scared, and then Terns arrive, and Terns is my human. Mm. And then Andarna said, well, she's my human as well. And they were like, what's going on there? And your place, there are not many humans, that you had to choose the same one.
Mm.
And then when she started to give like explanations about it, but it's not going really well. And Violet can see all of that. And then she just keeps playing. And then she's asking as well, do you bond with humans? And they say, no, we don't live with humans.
Mm.
And there's more dragons like you, or it's just you. Like, yeah, we're hundreds of us.
Mm-mm.
So it's just giving, obviously, more hints about how many we can expect from this new breed and where they can be.
Yeah, and I remember you being really disappointed because you were like, they're not rare, there's like hundreds of them.
Yes, I guess it's just because for me, Andarna, she was so unique. Mm. And I was wondering if we find Iris, then Andarna won't be that unique anymore. She will be just another breed.
Mm.
And yes, when we find there were more areas that we found out the reason of Andarna to be in the continent. It's just like, for me, like that special character that was Andarna was completely destroyed. So obviously, she's still a really nice character as a, you know, all the stuff that she does and how she feels. But for me, I guess in my mind, I have Andarna as such a high thing that she will be unique, she will be super powerful.
She is Irid, unique.
And that's kind of stuff. Really, we don't know the full story yet.
She is unique because she's exactly the same as Violet. She was not supposed to fight. She was supposed to be a feather tail because that was her family. But she was born into a situation where she had to fight.
Turns out she had really good at
it. Yeah. Violet is exactly the same. Violet was never meant to fight. Violet was supposed to be a librarian. Mm-hmm. She was not supposed to be a rider. She was born into this situation and she is good at it, or she's doing what she needs to do. I ultimately do think Violet has passed the test, and I think that is a little bit. So even when Leothan comes back at the end and he's still judgy on Violet, ultimately I think he knows that she doesn't want to fight. She wants to reunite the continent. She wants to cure the Venom. She doesn't want to kill them, although she does kill them. But so this is where we get the description of the Criterion. I'm going to read it so we get it right. You were left behind as the Criterion, the measurement of their growth, their ability to choose tranquility and harmony with all living things. We'd hoped you would return to tell us the humans had evolved, that they had blossomed under the wardstones and no longer used magic as a weapon. But instead, you have shown us the opposite. Firstly, the Criterion is testing the humans here, not the dragons, which a lot of the other stuff that they would say are relating to the dragons. They fired the wards and then they left. And they were hopeful, they left Andarna, they were hopeful that the humans would live under the wards and not need to fight. They're disappointed to see that that's not the case, and there's more and more bonding, and there's more and more like fighting, because it says something like, no longer used magic as a weapon, and that is using the magic via the dragons as a weapon. So they haven't changed in their view. And then she says, and dragonkind has not learned their lesson either. The male in the center's gaze jumps to Aetrim, gifted your human with ice. He dares to shift his focus to Tern. You armed yours with lightning. They shouldn't know that, for one thing, because they're not wielding at that point. But they know. They can obviously read minds. They're all in Tinzik. And then Riddick is like, that's not how signets work. Something sus going on there, isn't there?
Yes. So we've been told the signet is just like a chemical reaction between the dragon and the rider. So nobody chooses what's going to happen. It's just the core of the rider that makes the signet to appear. But here we're saying that, no, it's the dragon who chooses.
It feels like it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Why would you choose those things?
Yeah, why you choose giving to your rider eyes? You may be thirsty, you need like ice cubes or something.
I think it might be like a level of trust, or maybe it's what the dragon can do.
That's something that we need some clarity about it, because if the dragon knows what is their gift they can give, or it has maybe like a few options, and then it decide, okay, I'm going to give it this.
Mm.
I can give it fire, I can give it ice, I can give it this.
Mind walking, intrinsic.
Yeah, maybe I had one super signet and a few, but I can give it just once every single time that I bond. So I'm saving the best one to maybe my last one.
Oh, yeah.
Like turn with
Violet. How do they know which is going to be their last one?
Because it's the one to say, okay, I'm bonding for life with you. And I'm going, you're my
such
last.
Such a weird, I still don't get that with Tern. So weird.
Yeah.
I don't understand why he would sacrifice his own life for humans. Like, that's just out of character, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Well, Tern says to Violet, you're not my next, my last.
I know, but I don't get it. I think it's out of character. Mm. All of this, like, why would he put shame or bring shame to his like amazing familial line by just dying when this rider dies? Doesn't seem like he's a proud dragon. Why he wouldn't do that?
No, that's what I mean. That maybe when is the last one you give it the last signet, like maybe.
So he only had two.
So yeah, and the previous one was Siphon. There's kind of like a rare one as well. There's not many
both
Siphons around.
Both to do
around.
With power, aren't they?
Yes. So one is for transfer power, and the other one is to surrender power from the sky.
Right, so lightning is from the sky. I get you. I get that. Yeah. But I thought the power from the sky came from Andana being an Irid.
The lightning is the one who makes the signet valuable.
Anyway, and it says, he lowers his gaze to Andana. And you, our very hope, have handed this human something far more dangerous to wield, haven't you? So he's reading signets at the moment. He is reading Violet's second signet, so he knows that she's going to be a mind walker. And I'm convinced, so I'm just calling it mind walker now, because it can't just be a dream walker. But it's like a manipulator. She's able to manipulate things. But I also think there's a hint here that he's getting at the power from the sky as well. You're gifting her the power of the sky. What do we think about the gifting them, though? Do you think it just purely means that the dragons chose it? Or do you think that even without the dragon, they could still do it? Because that is what happens, isn't it? When Andana breaks the bond with Violet, Violet is still able to dreamwalk. So it's like gifted the power, no matter where. So the gift, she has the signet for life now, whether she has Andana there or not, as long as she has a power source to use it.
Then this girl will be a tower.
Yeah. So kind of like the Venin having signets. They don't need their dragon anymore. They can still use their signet because they've changed. They've just switched the power source.
That's what I think. Once you get the signet belongs to the rider.
Mm.
And obviously, they need the connection with the dragon to use it. But if they change the source of magic, the signal is still there.
Yeah.
So we start to see that these dragons, they really know everything about magic related. So in this case, like sickness. But the female is asking to Andarna as well, after Andarna was telling that she didn't get a good dreamless sleep because she was constantly interrupted. She is the one who says, "Show me your wings." Mm. And then Andarna is trying to do it and she can't do it properly. And then she said, "Normally it's not like this because I'm really tired, I've been flying." And then she said, "We have seen enough."
Mm.
How did they know there's something wrong with the wing? Because that dreamless sleep is not being done properly. Is it something that they happened like regular to the dragons, or maybe, it's just the irids, or dragons in general? Because she said straight away, "Show me your wing."
Mm.
So what is this thing that's related to not having the dreamless sleep properly and how maybe like defective wings?
Well, the muscles don't grow. We know that.
Hmm.
The muscles don't grow properly, do they? So
yeah, that's the version that we get from the elders.
Hmm.
So I don't know if this means something else or it's just...
But it could have been any muscle though, couldn't it? But yeah. She knows that it's the wing. Yeah, it's a bit odd.
Yeah, so it's just got that kind of feeling that maybe there's something like a second meaning here. It's not just related.
Yeah, I once speculated that irids weren't supposed to carry riders, so those muscles never developed anyway,
mm-hmm.
And that this kind of confirms. Does this confirm that that's not the case?
Yes, it's pretty much saying that maybe they can carry a rider. It's just Andarna that can't because all the issues that she had.
Yeah, she says she's seen enough.
Yes, because so far the first impression that the dragons have was the violet. She was using Andarna as a feather tail to get the gear from her. She was using them in battles and that kind of stuff. Then they think they're still using the magic for war, and worse, they trying to use a child, baby dragon, an adolescent, or juvenile, for war.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that for them is just not
unforgivable.
Yes.
What kind of worse. Is, isn't it?
Yes. The dragons, the Iris, they need to have like a conversation. So they go to the sea. When they are in the water, the scales change. And Violet said they look like a dark blue, a darker than the sea. They had a conversation, and then it's three dragons that leave. And Violet said, "Oh, that's not a good sign." Then when they're coming back out of the water, the scales change for a pale blue as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what is this reference about, because it changed when they go into the water. You see, maybe like we said before, it's something water in the water. Magic. Yeah, that maybe it's reacting with the dragons.
Maybe, because doesn't 10 stop Andarna going in the water?
Yes, she haven't been in the water at all. So we don't know how she'll react in the water.
Mm. Yeah, maybe there's something. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's something like really random to not be something there. The fact that the scales get darkened when they go into the water,
And
then when they change like pale, because maybe it's getting from the sky.
Yeah.
So it's maybe adjusting the frequency of the magic, maybe.
Yeah. I think they can take it from everywhere.
Yeah, they're magic, so they're flow. They are
magic. Oh, what if they provide the magic? What if they're the ones that put the magic into the ground in the first place from the sky? And the dragons are using it all up.
Well, if they're magic, they are the one that maybe they are just...
Maybe they bring the magic.
In the sky, in the water, in the ground, everywhere.
Yeah. We're flying through these chapters tonight. They're so short, aren't they? That's why we chose to do four, I guess.
Yes. It's really short and it's just pretty like straightforward having this meeting with the dragons.
Yeah. She could have linked these up and had fewer chapters. Fewer longer chapters.
Yeah. I don't know if it has to be maybe because the publisher is asking for specific...
Too many chapters. I actually, to be honest, I do actually like a short chapter. I like short chapters because then you feel like you're making lots of progress.
That's a trait that a lot of, well, not a lot, but a few like well-renowned authors use. So you have books that are not as big as this one. Well, they have maybe 110 chapters, but because maybe each chapter is like 5 pages.
Yeah. Some of these chapters are only like 2 pages though, aren't they?
Yeah.
I remember, yeah, sitting, because that's kind of hard to tell on a Kindle because you just keep reading, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But with the physical book, like the first time I read it, I read quite a bit of the physical book.
Yeah.
Kept swapping.
Yeah, I really love it when maybe I see the chapter there. I turn the page and then I can see in the other side of the next page, the next already chapter. The chapter there. Oh, it's a short one.
A short chapter. Even though you carry on reading just as much as you do.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's just the feeling that you are achieving that progress.
Yeah.
Is that.
Yeah.
Okay, chapter 42.
Epigraph. While the enemy's advance throughout Krovla makes it impossible to station a full riot at Suniva, we offer you 4 dragons and their riders. In the spirit of our alliance, you may expect a shipment of our most valuable resource, weaponry, to be used at your discretion. Official correspondence of General Augustine Melgren to Queen Mariah. So, we find out when they come, when the quest squad are back, and they're talking in battle brief, that someone leaked this information to the Dark Wielders, and that is why Queen Mariah is dead.
Mm-hmm.
The only person, so obviously we are led to believe that it's Panchak.
Well, officially, yes, he was Benin in the end, yeah.
Yeah, but the only person we actually know knew this information, the only person on the page we have confirmation knew this information, is General Melgren.
Mm-hmm.
Is this epigraph a hint that Melgren fed that information to the Dark Wielders?
I still don't know how to tell Melgren, because from Fort Wayne it's being pointed out that he might be a Venom. So there's been a couple of references that he might be the really bad guy.
He'd take his mask off and he would be the Venom.
Yes, so I think in Rebecca Yarrow is putting Melgren as just a red herring. So you're just like, oh, yes, he's going to be a Venom. He's going to be a Venom. And then turns out it's the one who's trying to do just the right thing, but in really bad way.
Mm.
But
yeah. No, but I don't know. It seemed like he's on our side, but the only person that we actually get proof that knew this was Melgren.
Yes.
I had a thought the other day, this is totally random, but I was chatting to someone in real life about it, and she asked who Violet's ex-boyfriends were. And I said, well, the other one, obviously, apart from Holden. And I said, Rebecca Yarros has kind of confirmed that we don't know them yet. But then I was like, what if it's Melgren's son? What if Melgren has a son and that's Violet's ex-boyfriend? That would be the other one.
It's funny because we thought for a little while that maybe Jack was Melgren's son as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was like so important to keep him alive, and we are like, why?
Yeah.
That maybe, yeah, but...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Lish is writing a fan fiction about that.
Yeah. I don't know if we got confirmation if it was somebody else from infantry as well, or maybe this time was a scribe.
Don't know. Okay. This is where the conversation gets really interesting, in my opinion. Dacen, I think it's still Dacen, the
female.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She says, "You've become the very thing we abhor, the horror we fled from." She is talking to the dragons at this point. She is not talking to Violet or Zayden, because Zayden hasn't arrived yet. She's talking to the dragons.
Mm-hmm.
This is confirmation that it was actually the dragons that caused the Irids to leave. The horrors. You have become the horror we fled. That is like damning. That is going back to the fables of the Baron, where the dragons are demonized.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is our like number one proof that the dragons are corrupted.
Yes. I still think the Empyrean are the ones who are hiding so many things. And Maybe they are going to be even worse than the Venom.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or if not the same.
Yeah.
That the Venom are trying to get the magic back, that the dragons
get a
and
balance,
the griffins.
Maybe. And the dragons are the ones that want to keep their magic just for themselves.
Yeah. The only suspicious thing is like that the Venom have scary, creepy red eyes. Normally, the only things that have scary, creepy red eyes in books are the bad guys.
Yeah, but in the same way that you shouldn't judge a book for the cover, you shouldn't judge a bad guy for the
veins around his eyes. Oh, I don't know. And they're all like, they speak a bit mean, don't they?
Yeah, this brings me back to that epigraph about it was never our land, we were just allowed to live in here.
Yeah, I was thinking about that today, actually. Yeah. And we've always thought that that meant the Venom or the people, like the wizards. They were wizards. And they could use magic.
Yeah.
But I think this is Irids. I think it's talking about the Irids.
Yes.
What could the horrors have been? And I was like thinking about what the horrors that the Irids came, that fled from. So one of the things it could be is that the bonding is like a corruption of purpose, that the dragons were never meant to bond, and the Irids kind of saw that as a really horrific thing, like possibly slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And they fled because, one, they were scared that stuff would happen, and two, they were just kind of like, we don't want any part of this. Kind of like a disguise as an alliance, but actually it's they feel like it's slavery.
I think the problem is because the only reason for bonding was to get a signet. And the signet is basically just a weapon.
A weapon, yeah.
So it's just magic that you're using for bad things. And that's the part that Iris, they were not agreed about it. So now we start to see they won the first six. And they start to find out how it works and how to survive everything. The Iris left because they didn't want to be part of bonding with humans to make magic a weapon.
We don't know how long they left, do we? We don't know.
Enough to create the wards. So we're talking about, yeah.
But they could have stayed like 100 years after that, couldn't they? I don't think they left immediately.
I think it's all related between Daramor.
Yeah.
Because Andana, she said that that's why I was left behind. So we're talking about that war between Daramor and the first city that's still going when they left.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's how
I don't know. They could have left after they saw that the humans, like, built the war college. Because the first six, there wasn't the war college, was there? There was just the camps.
Yes.
So they could have stuck around or never wanted to move to the Vale in the first place. That's the quote. We don't know. We don't know when the Irids left. Unless we'll have to go back through the timeline and see. The other thing is that the bonded dragons could now be kind of complicit in extracting the magic. So that's the reason why they're horrors. This is what I think we suspect anyway, isn't it? That the dragons are actually channeling from the ground and stealing the magic from the ground or controlling it that way. And I like your thinking that the Venom are the balance for the dragons.
Yeah.
The cure for the Venom is to remove the dragons.
Yeah, because everything has to have a balance. So light, dark, good, bad. So even when the Venom are the bad guys, they need to create the balance. And if the dragons are trying to overtake all the magic, the Dark Wielders, they need to intervene as well.
Yeah.
Because maybe that's how everything started. Just dragons trying to control the magic, and they start to get corrupted as well.
The other thing is that the dragons were clearly divided. So the seventh breed could have felt that war would never stop because the dragons keep fueling it. And again, this plays into our, I think we're convinced, aren't we, that by the end of the book, there's going to be no magic. And I think that that could be the thing. The only way to stop the war is to stop the dragons fueling it. So cut off the magic. And it's just another tick in that box that we'll end this series with no magic.
Yeah.
So they continue to criticize and judge. And they say, we have watched some of your journey and feel it is victory you seek and not peace. I wonder which parts they saw, because Violet doesn't ask for a cure everywhere. She's asking for an army. Mm. And I feel like this is an oversight on Violet's part, that they had the whole chance to go to Herodotus, and that's where they thought the cure would be. It's like they don't want to ask the humans for the cure. Her only hope was that the cure was with the Irids. Mm-hmm. So as they've been watching, they've not seen her searching for a cure. They've seen her searching for an army.
Yeah.
Because she was waiting to ask the Irids whether there was a cure.
Yeah, there was a secret mission for her.
Yeah. But really, she should have made it a bit more open, because there's nothing wrong with saying it. Like, I'm looking for a way to help or to
stop the venom.
Stop the venom.
Mm-hmm.
But without killing them. So can we not cure them? Can we not, like, fix their souls? Why is that so secret? Just because it's Zayden doesn't have to be so secret, does it? She doesn't have to tell everyone Zayden's venom.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone knows she's compassionate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like this is a big oversight on Violet's part. And it's caused her...
Mm. Yeah, because in the end, we didn't know what the people from Herodotus, they know about venom. And
yeah.
Then... might have the answer, or something, not cure, but something similar.
Zanar, like Zelna, could be lucky. There could be a book that contains it. Yeah.
Fortunately for you, we have here.
Yeah, a cure. Yeah.
So at this point, Violet's really confused. But one thing is clear: is that they're not gonna help. So Andarna is even saying that you're not going to help then, and they say, no, we're not going to help, because this is going to be maybe one of the ways that the Venin, they're going to learn how to deal with that once they devour all the land and they have no more magic.
Sounds like my mum, once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
don't come crying to me when it's all gone.
Yeah.
Sorry, mum. She's probably listening.
She is definitely listening. Until now, probably not anymore. But then Leoten is saying that either they die or starvation, or they start to learn what they had done and maybe start to be more aware of how to change.
Yeah, it's like faith, once they face what they've become.
Yes. And Andarna is asking, do you really think that is going to happen? And they say, well, if they know, they may be the offspring. So what are you talking about? Vernon are going to have children.
No, nope. Then... she is talking about the dragons.
Yeah.
She is talking about the dragons facing what they have been what they have become.
Mm-hmm.
This is the cure, by the way. She's talking about... the dragons have to accept that they have been corrupted. They have to learn to live without stealing magic.
Mm.
Because they're stealing magic, the venom are coming, and it's all the balance that we've been talking about. And then she's saying perhaps their offspring can evolve.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where I think the eggs are. I think Leothan took the eggs, and I think he's taken them as their own criterion to show whether the dragons can evolve.
Mm-hmm.
Their offspring can evolve.
Yeah, because there were exactly six. So one per den.
Yeah, one from each den. And they're doing their own experiment because the criterion failed, and they want desperately to see that something can change. If the humans can't change, can the dragons? And that is the kind of... the next criterion.
Yeah. Second test.
Yeah. Everything she's saying here is she's talking about dragons. Because you don't talk about offspring from a human. Well, dragons might. But for me, it's just totally clear. If you read this passage again,
mm-hmm.
everything she says is about dragons.
Yeah.
The dragons are the corrupt ones. The dragons are stealing magic. I think we're supposed to think it's about Venom.
Yeah, it's just the word thing when you're talking about venom, and that point of view and then send their offspring just venom don't reproduce that way. They just call for more venom to join.
Yeah. Listen to this and think that she's talking about the dragons, right? Mm-hmm. Perhaps the corrupted ones should devour the land in its entirety. Only when they're faced with starvation, they will confront the evil they've become. Either they'll die of the land and regenerate, or they'll confront the abominations they've become and change. I think she's talking about dragons.
Yeah, that definitely can apply to dragons. But
she's
it's
saying
strange. Yeah.
She said that they're the horror, they had become the horrors they had faced, mm-hmm. or they had fled from. I mean, it could be venom. Obviously, it could be venom. It could be that they fled from the venom, and now she's saying that the dragons have become just as bad mm-hmm. because they're stealing the magic as well.
Yeah. For me, for one moment, I was thinking, is it maybe referring about venom having children? And then I was thinking, maybe it's saying that maybe Satan and Violet at some point they're going to have a child. We all the size they had in the islands. And then maybe it's going to be like a half venom that's going to be evolved because it's not going to be completely
no.
venom.
Rebecca Yarros said that she wouldn't do that because a major theme of these books is consent, and both parties would have to consent to having a child, and neither of them are ready for it. Mm-hmm. So she said, she got rid of that rumor really quickly, which is good because I don't like the pregnancy tropes. Mm-hmm. You know, the main thing I have, and like when we're watching TV series like Lucifer,
yeah,
and I'm like, where's the kid? Who's looking after the kid? Because now I'm constantly worried about the kid.
Yeah.
And it's the same in other books when like the main female character and the main male character are off like in a big war saving the world. And the kid's somewhere at home with a nanny or something. I'm like, go and see your kid. It'd always be. Anyway.
So here is when, I can't remember if I was Leotan, the one who's saying there is no cure for the venom because it's
no,
not.
It was that bitch.
Yeah.
Days.
What it said is there is no a trade. There is no, they're changing the soul for power. It's just when they're stealing the power, that power starts to kill the soul piece by piece. And there's no cure for death. And then the first thing that came to my mind was Kaori talking about if you bring somebody from the dead, then you are a god. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, well, if you are a god, then
yeah,
that means that you are the cure.
The god is a cure. Gods will cure them. But two things. I don't think she's telling the truth. Mm-hmm. We know dragons lie. Also, how do they know so much about the Dark Wielders then? How do they know?
Well, Dark Wielders are part of magic and they are magic. I mean, the fact they knew like what Signe had, every single one of them, and just like we're looking, it's just
No, they're in their minds. I don't think it's from looking. I think it's because of the slide whistle they're in their mind.
Oh, there's traits or magic around. They can feel the whole thing. Whatever happened there, but they knew.
Yeah.
And they were right.
Yeah, but I still don't know how they'd know that. Mm. I'm not having it. I'm not having that there's no cure.
I think when you're getting your soul away, yes, there's no cure for that. But again, I don't think Satan is giving the soul for that power.
Yeah. The soul is not dead.
So when you are a venom, you are getting that power and you're giving your soul instead. Yes, there's no cure for you. But and say that if you're giving something else that we still don't know what exactly is, but it's not the soul, then it's different.
Yeah. And Donna says, will you at least tell us how the Dark Wielders were defeated in the Great War? And they say, well, apparently they weren't, if you're still asking. What's that about?
What actually
happened?
It feels more like they got like a massive blow and then they just been hiding for
600
centuries.
Years.
Yes. But whatever it happened has to be something massive. They went through all the continent, not just in just one place. It was pretty much the whole continent. Powerful enough to send all the Dark Wielders killed. or make him go away.
Something brought them back, didn't it? Or something. We know that when they started coming back, they were more organized, like the army.
Mm-hmm.
Like Atos had something to do with that.
Yes, or maybe...
I do think Atos is the big bad guy. You know, this sounds really weird, but...
I think in the end, General Atos is more a puppet from somebody else that's even worse, and that we still don't know.
Yeah, good point, because Atos is not clever enough, is he?
No, I definitely don't think he is the big boss. I think he is just
what if he like reawakened? Yeah, he is a bit shit though, isn't he? Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I don't think he can be the big bad guy. I think he's just so sick.
The funny thing about you saying that the Dark Wielders are working more organized is something that Brennan says, and he's talking from his experience from all the time spent in Eurasia. So it's something that maybe we can think is maybe Nolan is still alive as a Venom, and because Nolan was part of the army, is the one who's been training, because it's from that point when Brennan dies, the Dark Wielders start to be more organized. Because I was thinking that maybe it could be maybe Satan's grandfather, the one that we think they die, but maybe turned into a Venom. And he's part of the army as well, but this was 50 years ago, and it's just recently then Dark Wielders start to be more organized.
I think it was before that though, because I think it was Fen standing up, wasn't it? Fen Ryerson. It would be before Fen Ryerson like rebelled. Mm. And that was on that same night that they got caught. I would imagine it was before that. I just don't want Nalin to be Venom.
Mm-hmm. Be alive and be a Venom.
I want him to be Malak. I want him to have resurrected. I do genuinely want him to have resurrected Brennan.
Mm-hmm.
And had then become a god. And that is why Malak is with Violet, because of Tern.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It's a shame the former dragon.
I know it's ridiculous, and I know I'm the only person in the world saying this, but I've been saying it since Fourth Wing.
Yes. I just blame Kaori. It's not your fault.
It all comes down to that Kaori line. I just love the imagery of Malak sitting on his throne and Nalin knocking him off.
Mm.
I hope that sounds a bit wrong. Satan, like, knocking him off his throne.
After all of this, and they're not the one who says you preach peace while only having no is privilege. So Andarnas says that, well, you are the one who are disappointed for me.
Yeah, this line, you preach peace while only having known is privilege. That's really stuck with me. Mm. That's changed. And you know, like, I do always talk about this, how, like, books change my brain chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
This is a line that's changed my brain chemistry. I think I said this in our initial, like, spoiler-free episode. Rebecca Yarros clearly knows war. She's been through it. Her husband has been through it. And her parents as well. This is just such a, like, I think about this line a lot.
Yeah.
Especially with current news.
So, the dragons... they just want to finish the line telling to Andarna that even when she is one of them, she is not allowed to go to their island. So, yes, it's confirmed they're living on an island. And she shouldn't know any tracks or any clues about where they live.
Mm.
So Andarna is just completely excluded.
Yeah. This is where we get the first confirmation it's actually an island. So this is where we were like, oh, we were wrong about the Barons. But I still don't think we had to be wrong about the Barons. I think they could have lived there first and then moved to the island. They like expats.
I mean, they said they're magic. So if they were living in the Barons before and when they leave, maybe that was the reason that the Barons turned into the Barons and not actually the Venom. So maybe the Venom, they used to live
there. Yeah, I like that.
So because all they are magic and they're not spraying the magic anymore, all the land, they just start to
And that's, die. This is where they're like, once it's gone comes in because they left the magic in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
They provided the magic in the ground. Yeah, I really like this.
Yeah.
I think that could be cool. They say we've had a long flight to head and there is nothing to be gained here. So they don't live nearby. Mm-hmm. They're not in this group of islands.
Yes. Obviously, the reason they want to intervene is because they don't want them to find them.
Mm.
So they want to just...
maybe they're like, we've got a long flight, but actually it's just
on the other side of the island.
Yeah.
Here is when Seydan and Garrick arrives. So they go straight away to be next to Violet and Redoc. Seydan asks, how is it going? And Violet says, not going well. And then they feel this whistle as well, and now they can hear everything. Seydan is looking up, and then the female sees Seydan, and they say, abomination. She can see what
Seydan is. I think she would have, because she's in his head. Mm-hmm. Like, she would have known anyway.
Yes, but something that is strange for me here, because they are pretty much like praying for peace and that you need to leave each other and you need to bowl and that kind of stuff. And then when she said an abomination, I found it like weird, because if Seydan is a Venom and they're living together, they're in the same thing, it's pretty much what they're saying that they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. They're doing it right there. But I was wondering if maybe she refers to something else. Maybe saw Seydan's eye, and because we think that maybe somehow he's half dedicated or dedicated to a girl like Loial. And maybe when she says abomination, it's because the dragons, they don't respect the gods, and there's something related to that. They see Seydan's eyes.
No, it's got to be Venom. It's got to be Venom related, because she would have said that about Violet.
Hair. It's obviously it's because the Venom side. Mm-hmm. That's how it's been written. But because the previous and dialogue that they had to maybe preach peace, they had to be like more understanding, everyone happy together, and now when they are there, she said like abomination and this kind of stuff. For me, strange.
I think it's just to do with the way that it's perceived as stolen power, though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And Andana says they smell like stolen magic.
Yeah.
The Wyvern. I think the Irids can smell that.
Yeah.
She then narrows her eyes at Segael. She's addressing Segael here. And she says, your kind is beyond redemption. I think she's talking about Segael. She's talking about dragons again.
Yeah.
I honestly don't think she's talking about... She's kind of saying it because, Segael has bonded with...
With Avanen.
With this person. But I think she's talking about dragons again.
Yeah.
Right, I just want to talk about Leothyn's name. So, Leothyn... again, she's not using Gaelic anymore, so it's really hard, but... Leothyn makes me think of Leviathan from the Bible. He's kind of like a serpent dragon. It's like a sea dragon, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
A chaos dragon. And it's God created that beast.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that the link between God creating Leviathan and the dragons, the seventh breed... being kind of the link between the gods and the magic was interesting, because it was interesting to me, like you'd said earlier, that the dragons don't heed the puny gods. I think it's the dragons from the continent that don't. I think the seventh breed of dragons are more connected to the gods than we realize.
Yeah, this is something that we were talking in a previous episode when we were talking about the Irids and maybe the Irish connection with the Greek god. She was a messenger between the gods and the humans.
Yeah.
and she was like transporting a rainbow, and that's where we had all the colors and the dragons.
And I mean, this whole thing could be something like the Criterion could be the gods. It could be the gods testing the humans of whether they were ready to live in peace again, or whether they were ready to have the gods amongst them. And they are. And I think this is the thing. The Criterion could be the decider of whether the gods could walk among humanity again. The Irids think that they've failed, but actually Violet hasn't failed, and the gods are walking among them. And this is when it comes back to the six most powerful riders of the generation haven't walked to the earth at the same time for centuries, but actually they could be the physical manifestations of the gods. And we've done this before, haven't we? We've like linked the people to the gods, or the six most powerful riders to the gods. And Scribe Jessams has a good like carousel that links her predictions of who they are. Ours like slightly differed to that, but all the same kind of story. And it comes back to the fact that I think the Irids do have a connection to the gods.
It's interesting about the test about Violet, because it reminds me like a test that I can't remember if I was applied before, like in jails. So when they want to test if somebody actually has been reformed, one of the ways to test when they're looking for approbation to finish the sentence earlier is telling them, no, they has been rejected. And then if this person react badly, they see that, well, this person not being changed at all. But if they see that it's like taken like well, and they see like a change, that's part of the test. Even when you're being rejected, that's the test. See how you handle the rejection.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
But it does seem like that isn't the case, because Leothen comes, but none of the others do.
Yes, Leothen is the one that stays Seren Sedam for a little bit longer than the other ones. So I don't know if he can see something else.
Yeah, he can. He can see that Violet. So this is the point of the Irids is that they want the continent to not be divided and not at war. And they have evidence there that they have. Cat's not there, unfortunately, because they don't have the evidence that, but they've been following them. So they know that they've got someone from Poromiel. They know they've got Avenin, and they've got someone from Navarre, and they are working together to end this war. That is exactly what the Criterion is there to show. Although, well, it's not, because the Criterion is there to show that they don't need to fight anymore. They don't use magic as weapons. But they're getting there because they're trying to unite. Violet is trying to unite the continent. Yes, she's fallen in love with Zayda, and she's still killing other Venon. She's kind of deluding herself into thinking that he's not actually becoming one, which is exactly what I'm guilty of doing too. But there's just this thing that I think Leothen sees that, and sees that they're working together and that there's love there.
Yeah.
And that it is possible for a Venon to love someone who is not a Venon, and he's seeing that.
Well, just able to love, because in Theophany words, a Venon doesn't have any kind of feelings.
Yeah, but he's seen that he can.
Yeah, he sees that he's in love for Violet, that he's there to protect Violet.
I actually think it's Zayden that made the difference that brought Leothen back.
So the Irids left. The Andarna is feeling shed. She's going to the jungle. Tern goes behind to, you know, because he cares about her. Zayden is blocking Violet because he's feeling shit as well. He's feeling venom. Yes. He found out by Riddock as well, there's no cure for the venom. So there was like a lot of blows there for Zayden as well. And then we got Riddock, that he saw Zayden's eye. And then he's selling to Violet, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
And that's how we finish this chapter.
Yeah. Riddick knows.
Yeah, he knows now.
Shall we move on to Oryx Auguries?
Okay.
Oryx Auguries is the part of the show that we recap our favourite theory from today's episode, and then we will stitch them all together and make an absolutely bonkers theories. We'll make a big stitch of all of our theories.
Yes.
So what is your favorite theory from this week?
I had a few, but I think I changed my mind in the moment they were talking about this. And I think the Irids are the one who is spreading the magic and different sources, so they can spray into the sky, into the water, or into the ground. So it's opposite to the dragons. The dragons, they need the magic from sources. The Irids are the spraying the magic.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like it. My favorite is a bit more on the romantic side. So my favorite is that Zayden and Violet are actually soulmates, and that is why the magic cannot take Zayden's soul, because Violet has it.
Yes. Very romantic. I don't know if actually it's possible. I mean, if just because I'm saying my soul is yours, is it actually yours? Like, can you physically have it somewhere? Or...
Yeah, in my box of nothingness. No, I think in a fantasy book, yes. Mm-hmm. I think also the fact that Andana's egg was half onyx and half silver. Just, I love that theory that Andana was actually waiting for both of them until their souls united. Ultimately, this is a romance book. Rebecca Yarros is a romance writer. It doesn't matter if it's a contemporary or if it's set in a fantasy world. It will always be about love. Mm-hmm. And, like, love has to be the enduring thing. Love has to be the cure. Love has to be the, like, thing that's going to get everyone through. And I genuinely believe that she's always said there's no story without Violet and Zayden. It's a romance. Mm-hmm. There's going to be an ending. I don't know whether it's going to be happy. It's going to be happy for everyone. But love is, and soulmates is a theme, isn't it? Surely.
Yeah.
Even if they both die. I don't think they will, but even if they both die.
Like Romeo and Juliet. Mm. Still a love story.
It's a tragedy, but it's love. Okay, so sticking with the theme of precognition, let's look at chapter 43's epigraph for next week. If possible, hunt the enemy during the day. Their markings are so easily hidden by the shadows of night that it would not surprise me to find they walk among us. Venin, a compendium by Captain Drake Cordella. The Nightwing Drift.
Oh my gosh, I have so many things to say here about this, but I'm going to keep it for next one.
Yeah. Let's go to the interrogation chamber.
Okay, let's move on to the interrogation chamber.
Last week we asked, Zinal is with you and you somehow know which gift is on which card. You can only choose one of the gifts the squad gets. Which are you picking?
I will go with a compass. First, because it's something small, something that I can carry easily. I don't know how it works yet, Violet neither. Whatever it's going to be, I'm sure it's going to be something awesome, because Rebecca Yarros, she really loves Violet and she gives everything mm-hmm. to Violet, like the biggest dragon, the biggest signet. So yeah. I think in this occasion it's going to be like the biggest gift as well. So yeah. I'm going with that one. What about you?
I picked the same one.
Compass as well.
Yeah, but Zinal doesn't appear to be with me because it's already been taken by you, so I'll just have to have the wine instead.
I mean, we can share. Share a little bit of your wine, share a little bit of my compass with you.
Sounds good.
It would be funny if I'm using my compass, you're pointing out the wine. Destiny.
Yeah, deal. Yeah. You get the compass, I'll get the wine.
Okay.
I definitely don't want the slap in the face.
The kisses.
And I definitely don't want the arrow to the heart. I definitely don't want broccoli. I'm sorry. Yeah. I did want broccoli.
No. Another interesting question would be, who you give it the arrow? Hey, you, go here, grab this one. This one is good for you.
Oh.
Nah.
You'd just be like, don't take that one, wouldn't you? Mm. I'd be like, don't take it. Take a different one. Take a chance.
Yeah.
Anyway, this week, we've been to all of the aisles now. No more aisles. Well, apart from Loisam, but mm-hmm. we've been to all of the aisles that we will go to in this book. Which army do you want on your side?
Okay.
Who would you most want to have an alliance with?
I think had like really clear what's going to be my answer.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, that's going to be interesting for next week and the reasons to give.
Okay, and that's all for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Faithfully Fantasy Pod. We're most active on Instagram, so come and join the conversation. We'd love it if you'd come and follow us over on TikTok as well. We don't seem to be getting the numbers on TikTok, so come and follow us on TikTok as well. We always give credit on the show for theories, so we try our best to remember who has sent us theories. So please keep sending them to us. Let's be honest, the best theories come from all of you.
And with this, we have just one more thing to say. Thank you for listening to Faithfully Fantasy,
the husband and wife podcast talking all things Onyx Storm.
We'll see you next week with more theories, more deep dives, and of course, with more Faithfully Fantasy.
Bye.